Nice. I have to say, Misha, that the research that you submitted in order to be considered for this award, I had an opportunity to conduct some research on you, and I saw that you analyzed the United States foreign policy during the 1971 India-Pakistan crisis. I want you to discuss the significance of this research paper along with the relevance of some of the arguments that you made in order to provide perhaps some of the youth who are listening and who are interested in applying for this this same competition. What would you suggest in terms of structuring the essay based on the work that you submitted for this competition?
Oh, sure. Okay, well, I'll talk a little bit about the essay first, and
yes,
then I'll kind of propose some lessons or things to take away. So the essay I wrote was on American foreign policy during the 1971 India-Pakistan crisis. Just a little bit of background. This crisis began when the people of East Pakistan, which is now Bangladesh, started protesting against the government of West Pakistan that was controlling East Pakistan. The West Pakistani military began slaughtering people. This produced a refugee crisis with millions of refugees crossing over to neighboring India. And it eventually culminated in an India-Pakistan war in which India drove the West Pakistani army out of East Pakistan, and East Pakistan then became the independent state of Bangladesh. So why was this an interesting topic? It was interesting for me because it was a way to explore the theme of perception and misperception in international relations. Really, that was the main subject of the essay. And specifically, I was looking at two people, U.S. President Richard Nixon and his then National Security Advisor, Henry Kissinger, and how the way they perceived the crisis led them to make errors in judgment that actually created a real risk of war. So what were some of these errors? Nixon and Kissinger didn't really understand the Indian subcontinent and the local factors that motivated the government of India in particular. They preferred to see the conflict in terms of Cold War dynamics, where India was acting as a tool of the Soviet Union to destroy an American ally, West Pakistan. So they seriously exaggerated what India's actual motives and goals were. They saw the Soviet Union as the driving hand behind India's actions, whereas in reality it was India that was acting for its own reasons, and the Soviet Union was providing support, but by no means driving the pace of events. And then they also took the rhetoric of the People's Republic of China at face value. This was at a time when the U.S. was beginning to open relations with China. And Nixon and Kissinger were understandably concerned about how China would react to this crisis, since Pakistan was also a major ally of China. But they took Chinese rhetoric about being willing to attack India and face an invasion by the Soviet Union at face value, when a rational assessment of the state of the Chinese military, Chinese domestic politics, as well as China's habit of engaging in extravagant Maoist rhetoric without actually taking corresponding actions would have led them to take a much more measured response. Now, what was the result of this? The India-Pakistan crisis was originally a fairly narrow affair between India and Pakistan for local reasons. The U.S. saw this as an attempt by the Soviet Union, with the collusion of India, to destroy an American ally and thereby discredit the United States' ability to protect its allies. And it thought that China would attack India because of this, which would cause the Soviet Union to attack China. The U.S. was therefore willing to put its forces on nuclear alert and presumably go to war with the Soviet Union if the Soviet Union attacked China. So this is what I mean about misperception creating an extremely risky situation. Now, we know, in fact, that China was never willing to go to war to defend Pakistan, and the Soviet Union had no intention of egging India on to destroy Pakistan completely. They merely wanted to assist their ally India to achieve its aims in East Pakistan while leaving West Pakistan to continue to exist as a state. So this is what I mean about misperception. But in terms of the lessons learned, one of the interesting things about this paper is it was able to say something new because it relied on recent secondary source research as well as original documents. This can be a challenge in history or international relations because so much has been written, but if you can really find a niche issue and try to make a new and creative argument, I think that's something that would really kind of distinguish your essay and give it a good shot for a competition like this or similar competitions. So that's it really takes some additional research and strategic thought to identify a topic like that, and also to develop a thesis that's really something new. But I would just say, you know, put in the time to research and develop a really solid understanding, and then that will become possible.
Overall, Misha, as you mentioned, your essay examined the misperceptions that led to certain decisions that were made. Your essay also shed some light on other cases where great powers involving support states actively committed mass atrocities for strategic reasons. Would you be able to also provide a couple examples of where support states have actively committed mass atrocities for strategic reason?
Sure. I mean, one of the examples you could see today is Syria, which is being supported by both Russia and Iran, even though the Assad government has been committing war crimes in its efforts to suppress the rebellion against it that began in 2011. And it's you can definitely, there are obviously different situations, but you can draw certain parallels between them. Syria is a vital ally of Iran. It has a close relationship to Russia, though, has a close relationship to Russia and is an ally, though not necessarily a vital ally. And both Russia and Iran, therefore, have an interest in preserving the Syrian state against a popular rebellion, even though the government they're supporting is committing war crimes, possibly crimes against humanity, against the rebel forces and the population in rebel areas. And in a lot of cases, you can see similar reasons. It appears that Russia sees its now intervention in Syria, and before that, its support for the Assad government, as a way to challenge the power of the United States and demonstrate that just because the United States has declared that a regime must go, a leader must go, that leader can still remain. And in Iran's case, it's part of Iran's confrontation with Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states, where Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states are supporting the rebels in an attempt to deprive Iran of its ally. Just as the U.S. was willing to support the Pakistani government that was committing mass atrocity crimes because it was an ally and the U.S. wanted to protect its allies, you can see definitely parallels to Iran's actions. So in short, the India-Pakistan essay that I wrote about was specific to the Cold War, but I think the parallel is when there are geopolitical confrontations going on that have deep roots and are seen as important by the states in question, states will often be willing to support an ally that is doing atrocious or despicable things for the sake of strengthening their position in that confrontation and preventing a loss of power.
Do you think there's a possibility that Russia, Iran, North Korea, and China will continue to build the relationship that they have and will one day perhaps attack the United States of America Or if they don't attack the U.S., do you think there's a possibility that North Korea would attack Canada in order to provide the United States with an example of the strength associated with the nuclear missiles that North Korea currently has?
I don't think that's likely, or with, wouldn't go so far to say as not within the realm of possibility, but it's extremely unlikely just because the United States not only retains the most powerful conventional military, but also nuclear forces that are survivable and could not be destroyed in a first strike. So that's really the reason. I mean, you would really have to be crazy or willing to risk the destruction of your own country to attack the United States in such a way. But.
And I agree with you. The reason why I wanted to ask you that question is because there are certain experts out there who do believe that the relationship between Russia, North Korea, China, and Iran is so strong that if North Korea or Russia wanted to attack someone, they would attack Canada in order to provide an example of what can happen. Mm. I personally don't believe that that's a possibility, but that's not to say that the nuclear missiles of North Korea or Russia aren't strong.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of our military and the strength of the military in the United States, I think we have a strong support and a strong base that if anything were to happen, we do have, like I mentioned, that support that's existent
mm-hmm.
and going on strong.
Yeah, definitely.